We the Monster Squad.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
Tonight, Misfit Mike and I will be kicking the Wolfman in his nards with the Monster Squad.
Yeah!
And this movie released back in 1987 and was written by Shane Black and Fred Decker and was directed by Fred Decker. This is one of his bigger movies, actually.
Yep.
And we've done some other films of his recently, actually. We did House. Mm-hmm. He's responsible for that one, as well as... I can't think of the one. It's right on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of it. He's done a lot of stuff, though.
Oh, yeah.
And for our top cast, we have Andre Gower, who plays Sean, Robbie Kiger as Patrick, and he was Job in Children of the Corn. He hasn't really done much since Monster Squad, I think. He kind of fell off the face of the earth.
Right.
I don't really know exactly what happened, but he's really difficult person to find.
Yeah, it could be one of those situations where he just, you know, he was a child actor and then he decided that he didn't want to do it.
And then we have Stephen Mocht.
Mocht.
He plays Dell. He's Sean's dad. He's phenomenal in this movie. He's great. Mm-hmm. He's got a really nice long resume on IMDb as well. Ryan Lambert, who plays Rudy, he's really good. Seems like a really nice guy too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to mention Brent Chalum as Horace. He's got some of the most rememberable quotes from this movie.
Yeah, he does.
Unfortunately, he passed away from pneumonia in 1997, and he was only 22 years old.
Yeah, too
it
damn
sucks.
Young.
Sucks. Yeah, it really too sucks, man. He, from what everyone said about him, all the actors, actresses, and everyone on the set, said he was just a terrific kid to work with.
Yeah.
Just a really terrific guy, really nice, friendly. The chick who played Phoebe said he was just a sweetie on the set. It's too bad.
Yeah, it's a shame to see somebody, especially with such a bright future, taken out at such a young age.
Yeah.
We have this movie to remember him by.
Exactly, yes, yes. Now let's start things off here. Now, this is a big movie for me, as well as it is for you, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I describe Monster Squad to anyone who hasn't seen it, I like to say that it's basically the Goonies, only these kids meet the Universal Monsters. A little Stand By Me in it as well, maybe Breakfast Club. I love movies like this from the 80s where it's just a group of kids set out to save the world, and they really are the only ones that can do anything about it. What Monster Squad emulates is that feeling of being a kid and having to grow up, that sense of adventure, you know, fun and true friendship. I'm not talking about the friends that we have now, but like, I mean, I'm talking about the friends that I had when I was around 11 years old. The friends I would sneak out of the house to go explore with, which was a huge deal at this time, the 80s and 90s. It was a really big deal then because you didn't have social media or anything too, so you didn't have kids looking at their screens all the time.
Yep.
All you had were your friends, your BMX bikes, tree houses, nature, and in my case, monsters. We were in our own world, and we thought that we were the only ones who knew or even thought about impending monster outbreaks or an alien invasion. This group of kids in Monster Squad remind me of this small group of friends that I had growing up, and it really takes me back there whenever I watch this movie. What about you, Mike?
I mean, I can remember being 11, 12 years old and basically my mom kicking me out of the house for the day.
Yep.
And I'd go and gather up my little group of friends and we'd go out in the woods or go to some abandoned buildings or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, places nowadays that if you went as a kid, parents would probably have 13 freaking heart attacks.
I mean, there was trespassing back then, but it wasn't like it is today where, like, you know, you have a criminal record for trespassing as a 10-year-old, you know?
Right.
It was just a different time back then. But that's cool. That's cool. I know that you grew up watching this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you watched this movie, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
For the first time in how long has it been?
2005, I think it was the last time I had watched it. And it's one of the movies that I've loved for years, but, you know, things get in the way, you know, life gets in the way, and you just realize after all these years, I haven't watched this movie in forever, so, yeah, it was very nice to revisit it, and as I said the other day, thank you for mentioning doing this movie.
Of course.
It brought back a lot of really really good memories, and it was a real pleasure revisiting it after all this time.
How was it watching the Blu-ray version of this? Because I don't know about you, but the last time I watched this movie, it was on DVD, and then before that was VHS. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a recorded copy off of the, it was the TV version that I had growing up mostly.
Yeah.
So watching the Blu-ray for me, at least, was just outstanding. What was it like
phenomenal.
For you? Was it
absolutely phenomenal? The Blu-ray that I have is a little different than the one you have. Mine's just a basic Blu-ray, but it was still very well done, very crisp, you know, and clear. And I also was fortunate enough to get the documentary Wolfman's Got Nards.
It's a great documentary, isn't it?
Yes,
it was really
last night
fun.
Was my first time watching that ever, and I absolutely loved it. Just going through the history of this movie and how this movie has affected so many people over the years, it just really does my heart good to know that this movie, even though it was a commercial flop when it first came out.
And they mentioned that in the documentary Wolfman's Got Nards, that I think it was Fred Decker who said that he thinks, and a lot of the others who worked on the movie, was because the same week this released, The Lost Boys released.
2 weeks after The Lost Boys.
2 weeks after, yeah. So it was around the same time. So I can understand that because, I mean, with Lost Boys, of course, you've got more well-known actors. They were more established at this time. Their careers had taken off a little bit more. You had Kiefer Sutherland and, of course, the Frog Brothers, who was, one of them was Corey Feldman. Mm-hmm. And then you had the other Corey.
Corey
I mean,
so,
just a great cast in that movie. And then you have Monster Squad. All these like no-name people that haven't done anything. And Fred Decker wasn't really a big deal at this time, I don't think. Over the years, he's become a big deal. I mean, he's all these cult classic movies he's done, this being one of them. I could understand why it might have flopped, but over the years, it's really taken off. And I think more people than they knew loved this movie. And social media definitely had a hand in that.
Oh, sure.
Because once social media happened, then, you know, you could find anything. So, The Wolfman's Got Nards documentary was fun to watch because, like you said, you see all the love for this movie. And it's amazing.
Yeah. There's actually a one of the original Monster Squad movie posters in the background a lot in this movie.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah.
I really want that poster. It is amazing.
It's one of the things that drew me to this in the video store, going in there and seeing these Universal monsters. Well, not really redone, but I do know that according to licensing issues, the crew had to create characters that were suggestive, but not exact copies of the Universal's iconic monsters.
And I think they did very good with that.
I think they did a great job. I mean, the challenge was to suggest those classic creatures without really copying them. Mm. And this is what Shane Mann.
Mahan.
He said because we didn't have permission or the license to use of those specific images. Mm. So they could do Gillman, for example, but it couldn't look too much like the creature from the Black Lagoon. In my opinion, and I think you'd agree with me, Mike, I think that this Gillman is the best out of all of them. I think he looks fantastic.
Oh, same here. I think all of the monsters in this look very good. Personally, out of all of them, I think my personal favorite is just because I love the character so much is the Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he looks amazing.
He's great.
Gillman looks great. The werewolf looks freaking amazing.
You know, I think it's funny because the werewolf's face was modeled after Stan Winston, the creator of all that, he recreated, they had to do all that stuff, but he was the guy to do it. I think if you see the guy, it looks pretty damn close. It's kind of scary. And it's cool because you can tell, and they mentioned this, they did take from different werewolf movies. Like in this Wolfman, I mean, you can totally see Curse of the Werewolf, the Hammer Werewolf.
Oh, yeah.
You can see a little bit of the Lon Chaney's Wolfman in it.
And a bit of the Werewolf in London.
Yep, a little bit. Only this is a Wolfman.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, that's a bit more scarier for me. American Werewolf in London, hands down, the best werewolf movie. But there's just something about the whole Teen Wolf, Werewolf of Monster High or something like that?
Yeah.
Werewolf High. Something about like a werewolf that chases after you on two legs is absolutely terrifying. And I thought that this Wolfman looked just fantastic. Scary, goofy at times, and just fun.
It's definitely a different take on the whole Wolfman genre. And I really think that the Dracula in this is probably one of the more sinister looking Draculas.
He's great.
Out of, you know, all, especially for being, you know, this kind of, yeah, it's a horror movie, but it's kind of more aimed at kids. He was scary. He was legitimately a sinister, you know, version of Dracula. And of course, Frankenstein's monster in this looks fantastic.
He looks really good. Tom Noonan is the guy who played Frankenstein, yeah. And he did he was a really different Frankenstein. This Frankenstein's monster melts your heart.
Yeah.
You can't forget these characters. And you know, we just did the Universal Monsters at the beginning of the year. So It was great to come back and revisit these characters again.
Oh, yeah.
And Gilman was just, all of these monsters are great. The prosthetics and the suit are just visually brilliant with Gilman.
Oh, yeah.
The mummy, I thought he was pretty scary looking. Dracula was, yeah, like you said, I mean, he's a brilliant Dracula. He's very evil, but he's rather charming at the same time. And he most certainly does have screen presence that brings the character back from the dead. I mean, really does. And I mean, I think the Wolfman looks real, too. Like, realistic, especially for 1987. Mm-hmm. When he's changing from human to wolf, it looks incredible, doesn't it? Yeah. It's nothing compared to movies like American Werewolf in London, but this scene will still send shivers down your spine.
Oh, no, it's not near as good as that, but it definitely ranks up there as one of the better ones that, you know, I've seen.
Mm-hmm. And it was two guys playing him, too. The human guy, and there's that scene in the phone booth where he starts changing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one actor, but it's a whole different actor in the full werewolf attire. And I thought they did a great job. Dracula's played by Duncan Regger.
Yeah.
But Duncan is, he's a pretty well-established actor, and he did a very great job for this. And from what I heard, he stayed in character through the whole movie, as well as Tom Noonan, who played Frankenstein's monster. And I guess the kids were a little freaked out by that.
I can understand why.
I mean, this Frankenstein's monster's not too scary. Like I said, he's just got heart to him, and he cares, and he's got a emotional side to him. And I loved that. But he's still Frankenstein's monster. He's still strong.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still very intimidating when you see him on screen.
You know what I thought was really cool about the Wolfman in this is I love the contrast between him as a human and him as the Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see him first as, you know, a human, and he's, you know, pleading with
the police
to, you know, lock him up and everything. And of course, they're not taking him serious and whatever.
I'm a werewolf.
And he's just, you know, begging.
He's just beating the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And they still won't lock him up.
And then they end up, you know, unloading him, and then the body disappears and whatever. But, you know, he's sitting there pleading with them to lock him up and whatever because he doesn't want to hurt anybody.
No. Even the scene when Dracula had to drug him.
Yeah.
He didn't swallow the pills that he was given.
Right.
He spits them out and he unties himself and he gets out of there to try to warn Sean's father.
Yeah.
He's like, who's the police? You know, that his family's in danger and stuff. Yeah, like you said, he doesn't want to hurt anybody.
Right.
Yeah, I do like that that character as well. It played very well.
Yeah, I love how you had, you know, Dracula, who was, you know, just this evil, dark, monstrous character, but then you had Frankenstein's monster, who just, he didn't want to hurt anybody, he just wanted to, you know, find a friend, and, you know, he found a friend in Phoebe and the boys and whatever, and, you know, I just really love how those two characters played off of one another, because you should think at the beginning, when, you know, they're bringing Frankenstein up out of the water, and they, you know, open the casket and they bring him back to life, you think, oh God, he's going to be on Dracula's side, and, you know, these kids are screwed.
You'd think that because he's Frankenstein's monster.
Right. So
it's a great story. It's a great little story.
Oh, I mean, it's fantastic.
It's a great family movie, I think. I used to watch this with my father growing up. He loved it as well. I mean, I think that the Monster Squad is a great homage to the black and white Universal Monster. I think they did a fantastic job with it. It's such a fun watch.
It is. And it's something that, you know, again, like with some of the other movies we've done recently, it's something that you can have your kids watch.
Yeah. I mean, there's some, there's some politically incorrect stuff in this movie for today.
Yeah.
And you get the words faggot being used a couple times in it, and homo and stuff like that. But
they quote unquote fat shame and slut shame and all that shit. But you got to figure it was 1987.
Yeah, this is just how kids talked then. This is how we talked, and it was just a different time back then. I mean, then you hear it, and it's just a stupid word for this time. It's not like they really meant anything by it. And today, people have become more sensitive to it, and, you know, it's understandable. But yeah, when watching this movie, you really kind of got to remember that this is 1987. This is just how it was. And plus, these are just a bunch of kids. I mean, they're like literally 14, 15 years old in this movie.
A word only has power if you give it to the word. It's that simple.
I agree. People are just way too sensitive today and just too offended by everything.
And the whole thing is that if I was to get offended by every time somebody calls me a word that I don't like, I'd never be unoffended.
And we can sit here all day and talk about this, but you know damn well no one's going to listen.
Yeah, this is true.
Because, I mean, if it was that easy, that we'd live in a much nicer world.
Yeah, we could have, like, Dean Martin comedy roasts back and stuff.
Oh, God.
Like
okay,
that.
Moving on. I wanted to mention that the mom who plays in this movie, Mary Ellen Trainer, she's the mother of the lead siblings who also plays the mother in Goonies. Did you know that?
That's where I know her from.
I'm shocked you didn't bring that up first because you're a big Goonies
fan.
Holy
crap. I was thinking last night I knew her from somewhere, but I could not think of this for the life of me.
She was, you know, she was in Goonies about as much as she was in Monster Squad. More of a cameo, if anything. You know, she had a very small role, but yeah, same mom. Very cool.
Like I said, I've seen this movie 100 times. I never clicked in my head.
For instance, did you know Liam Neeson was paid for a part that was never shot?
Really?
In this movie. Yeah. And Ryan Lambert, who plays Rudy, I think he still is an ordained Lutheran minister. I didn't see that coming.
No.
But Seth Green, he screen tested for a role, and he even read with Andre Gower, who plays Sean.
Mm-hmm.
He was cast as Sean. He didn't get the part, unfortunately. Seth Green, I can't imagine what this movie would be like if
that
he did.
But crazy.
The two of them became really good friends, and I guess they're still really good friends till this day, which is pretty cool.
They had so many different actors and actresses on there from, you know, different horror films that just really surprised me that they were on there. Heather Langenkamp was on there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Adam Green was on there. You know how huge of a fan I am of him.
Adam Green is on like every documentary now that comes out.
Pretty much. But it was just
which is awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool to see him on there because, you know, him talking about how much this movie influenced him when he was a kid. Of course, Fred Dekker was on there, obviously. But
the human Eeyore, as you like to so lovingly put.
He seems like a super nice guy, but he looks like he's about 3 minutes away from jumping off a bridge somewhere.
Yeah, he just seems a little bit depressed.
I mean,
I don't know why.
I kind of feel bad for the guy if he's got some issues going on and whatnot, but damn.
Now, you mentioned Dracula.
Yes.
I was going to mention when you were talking about how great he was. In 2006, the Wizard magazine, whatever that is, I have no idea, but I just think that this is cool that it made a list of 100 greatest villains of all time, and Dracula from this movie was ranked at number 30 on the list.
Oh, wow.
Surprisingly, though, it was for Duncan's performance in this film.
Mm.
And his performance was chosen over all the other versions of the character, which is pretty shocking, but that just goes to show like how effective his character was in Monster Squad. And Dracula is still considered to be one of the absolute best interpretations of the character in this movie.
I can see that.
I thought that, I mean, his performance is brilliant, yes, but when you first see him on the screen, at least when I did, I thought it was a little trick-or-treat with his cape and everything. But they also could not copy the Universal Monsters.
Right.
So they had to go in some other direction. So I understand why they went with his appearance like this.
Right.
It still worked for this movie and it's still great.
Yeah. And that was the best thing, you know. It was hokey, but it was hokey in the best of ways it could be.
If that makes sense to our listeners.
Well, if
that
they've
makes
been
sense to me.
if they're listening, been listening to our podcast, then yes, it should make perfect sense with them knowing how my brain works.
If you're new, you might want to listen a few more times, get used to how Misfit Mike kind of works.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of a muddy water up there in his brain.
Anywho.
Sometimes you got to smack him in the head to get it moving.
Anywho.
Yeah, I love you too.
but I think that the way that they did Dracula in this is exactly the way it needed to be done. If they would have had a Dracula on here that was like Bela Lugosi, it would have been too much.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been too much.
You know, or if they
wouldn't
had,
have made much sense.
You know, if they went to the other spectrum and had one on here like freaking Count Chocula, that would have been too corny.
At that point, you're just better off making a cartoon.
Yeah.
Or just Scooby-Doo.
You know, or if they had the Count from Sesame Street or something like that.
I could have seen Christopher Lee actually playing in this movie, to be honest. I think he could have pulled it off back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, I mean, he would have had to really clean up the way he usually plays Dracula, but it could have been done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Christopher freaking Lee. The guy can do pretty much any type of acting. So
yeah, that guy's like a jack of all trades kind of guy.
He was amazing.
Yeah, he was. The Monster Squad's a society of these young preteens. They idolize these classic monsters and monster movies, and they hold these meetings, gatherings, or whatever you would call it, in this tree clubhouse. And I always wanted a tree house like this. It was so fucking cool. It had like one end of it was like lower than the other, and you had to step up. It had like beds up in there. I don't know if you noticed it had the zombie poster in there from how do you say his name? Fulci. Yep. Had some other really cool stuff in there too. I loved it.
Dude, if I would have had a freaking treehouse like that growing up, I'd probably still be living in it.
I'd still be there too. Yeah, I never would have. I never would have come out. Would have been awesome. But club leader Sean, who's played by Andre Gower, whose five-year-old sister, Phoebe, and
Phoebe.
Phoebe, I'm sorry. She's played by Ashley Bank. And she's a terrific actress. Terrific. She's very cute in this movie. She really was just a little cutie. She wants to desperately join the club.
The Monster Club.
The Monster Club. The intro's kind of, it's a little slow to start, you know. Mm-hmm. You see them in school, they're talking to the principal, talking about monster shit, blah, blah, blah. But it starts to really get interesting when Sean is given this diary of the legendary vampire hunter, Abraham Van Helsing.
Which is written in German.
And, yeah, and in the very, very beginning of the movie, I forgot to mention this. It's like this battle. You have these vampire hunters, and Van Helsing's one of them, comes into this, like, castle. I guess it's supposed to be Dracula's castle. And it's very old time. It's like 100 years ago or something like that before present day. And they come in, and he's got this wicked cool crossbow that he shoots vampires with these wooden stakes.
That first part there where the vampire-ess is eating the possum.
It's pretty,
that
pretty
was
gross.
Pretty gross.
So they're in there killing vampires and stuff, and then you have this girl who's holding this amulet, and Van Helsing is screaming at her to read in German, and it's funny because the whole time I'm going, she can't read if you're screaming in her ear. But yeah,
it's not her fault she can't read.
So she's reading in German, and then all of a sudden the amulet starts flashing. This big whirlwind tornado looking black hole kind of like
limbo
shows up. It's, yeah, it's supposed to be limbo. And
I will
start sucking all the evil up,
yeah,
and everything else, apparently.
I will say that beginning scene with the special effects with the like skeletons and stuff coming up out of the ground.
That was cool.
That was really well done.
It was.
Really well done, especially for 87.
Yeah, and for 87, this black hole thing that's like CGI of some sort.
Yeah.
It didn't look that terrible.
No, it
looked it's time.
Again, you got to get, you know, think 87. You know, this was some pretty high tech stuff for being that far back.
For this time, yeah, it really was. I thought it looked great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Van Helsing screaming at the girl there, and then this limbo happens, and
everybody gets sucked in,
and evil gets sucked in, and then it turns to present day. So anyway, at this time, he's got this legendary vampire hunter diary, and he realizes it's in German. It's toned down quite a bit. I mean, I'd be a little upset too. Sean, his best friend Patrick, who's played by Robbie Kiger, and the rest of the Monster Squad, only at this time they're not called the Monster Squad.
They're called the Monster Club.
They're just a Monster Club, I guess. They're scared of this scary German guy. I guess they've heard, like, all these rumors about him and stuff. Yeah. But he's actually a really nice guy.
The part there where he's coming out with the knife. Okay, kids, this is the last chance
for pie.
And that was a good-ass looking pie, too.
Yeah, he was just, like, the sweet old German guy. And the kids get invited into the house. And he's going to... You know, he's going to be a really nice gentleman and translate the diary for him.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there. You know, I love the guy's house. It's very classic looking. Yeah. All of his furniture and stuff. It's very old school.
Yeah, I really like this part. And they're going to leave and they're talking about monsters. And he said, yeah, I'm pretty familiar with monsters. And then you see the...
His shirt sleeve briefly reveals a concentration camp tattoo.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid watching this movie, I never really thought anything of that, you know, right. Because I was like 8 years old and I hadn't learned about it yet.
You don't think about that stuff when you're a kid.
No, but I did like kind of like wonder like, oh, he's got some sort of marking. He must have some sort of experience with this. But as it turns out, he really does have like brutal experience with it. So, I mean, I thought that was a pretty good scene in this movie showing that Nazis and the whole concentration camp, like monsters, you know, somewhat relatable in a sense, mm-hmm. not exactly, but it sort of gives you that idea.
Right. And I also, the guy who played that part, and I cannot remember his name for the life of me.
Leonardo Cimino?
Yeah. He has done a number of other
tons of stuff. Yeah,
and
he has.
I can remember him from him being in a million things, but I can't remember what the hell he's been in.
Yeah.
I know I've seen him in tons of different stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's passed since then.
Yeah, he has, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, this was 87, and he was quite aged in this movie.
It seemed like an amazing guy. I've seen interviews with him, and always a very nice, soft-spoken person.
So the diary describes in great detail that an amulet that is composed of concentrated good, one day every century, apparently, as the forces of good and evil reach a balance,
mm-hmm.
the otherwise indestructible amulet becomes vulnerable to destruction, and the next day of balance falls within a couple of days at the stroke of midnight. Or what does he say? 100 years ago tomorrow night.
Yeah, so it's got to be at midnight.
Yeah. The kids realize that they have to find the amulet before, the day of balance arrives.
Before Dracula finds it.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Dracula is there. He wants to find the amulet to destroy it. So once they have the amulet, the kids can use it with that incantation from Van Helsing's diary.
Me tied Odie Walker.
God damn it, Mike. Here we go. Let me finish this. Okay, so to open a hole in the universe and cast the monsters into limbo, as shown in the prelude. Van Helsing had unsuccessfully attempted this 100 years ago, apparently, in order to defeat his old adversary, Count Dracula. His apprentices, they then emigrated to the U.S. to hide the amulet, where mm-hmm. it was out of Dracula's immediate reach. One thing that I found interesting about this, because he goes to the Shadowbrook Road
mm-hmm.
house or whatever it is, that's where the amulet is, apparently.
Yeah.
Why is it there? You ever wonder, like, why the hell is it here?
Again, we can't start we can't start unraveling these movies because then it doesn't work.
I mean, for a movie like this, I feel like you really cannot pick it apart too much.
No.
You just have to watch it for what it is.
It's an 80s movie. It. It's
that's all you
an
have
80s
to say.
Movie.
Yeah, that's all you have to say. It's an 80s movie. So, meanwhile, Dracula seeks to obtain the amulet before the Monster Squad does, and that the Count can take control of the world and plunge it into darkness. Because that's what Count Dracula wants to do.
Yeah, I didn't think he wanted to plunge into a world of flowers.
To this end, oh my god, Mike, god damn it. To this end, he assembles several monstrous allies. I mean, this is where it gets really good. Once you see all of these amazing Universal characters on the screen, you just don't want to stop watching it. That's what's great about this movie. It builds and builds and keeps getting interesting and more interesting. And it's not a hokey little B-movie either. The special effects, the cinematography in this, even the score,
mm-hmm.
it was done very well.
Oh, yeah.
Very well.
And, you know, it's really cool because with all these monsters, it's like an evil monster version of the Power Rangers.
No.
You know what would be awesome, though?
What?
If they were to do a remake of this movie, or like a reimagining of this movie,
mm-hmm.
and instead of having like Dracula and Gilman and all that, they had like Jason and Michael Myers and Leatherface and Freddy and...
I'm waiting for the day that that happens. If they ever did actually remake this movie, you know that the comedy would be very limited.
I don't think it would work.
No.
I don't think it'll work. I think you have to have that comedy aspect.
That's why this movie worked, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of comedy, I mean, but you have to do it just right, or else it's just not going to be...
Well, you sure as shit couldn't have taken this movie seriously, even if they tried to make it that way.
It's one thing to have the monsters have their own separate movies. It's another thing to put them all together and have it like this. You also can't help but think of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
With something like this. So, a mummy, the amphibious Gillman, and then you have the Wolfman, in addition to three schoolgirls, while the Count transforms them into his vampiric servants or whatever.
Vampire bride.
Dracula steals a crate from an old World War II bomber in flight, which carries a crate containing Frankenstein's monster for some reason, completing his allies. And I have to mention that the plane where Dracula first appears has Browning written on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a nod to the director Todd Browning, who directed Dracula from 1931.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that and I flipped. I was like, that's so cool. It has all these really cool little nods throughout this movie, which, again, is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great to see this stuff. It's great to see them give little nods. I mean, you have to with a movie like this, I feel, if you're going to put all of these Universal monsters in this movie.
Now, didn't Dracula, like, punch the guy in the plane?
He did. And that was one of the most, or the more brilliant characteristics, I think, of the Dracula character that Duncan brought to this character.
Yeah.
He was more sinister and evil, and just, he did that stuff. He'd punch you in the face, you know, he would choke you, he'd pick you up and call you a bitch, like he did towards the end. I mean, the way that he portrayed this character was, it was different than anything out there, still till this day.
It kind of caught me off guard, because it's like, here's Dracula, he has all these powers, and he just freaking cold cocked this guy.
That's all
like,
he really...
out of nowhere.
That's all he really had to do. And I have to point this out, because if not, then I wouldn't be a true fan. The guy he punches,
mm-hmm.
he is one of the guys who was in Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, nice.
He plays Stefania's father from Italy in a few episodes in Everybody Loves Raymond. Actually, my girlfriend pointed that out to me, and I had to look it up on IMDb, and I was really surprised that I didn't even notice it. Okay, so however, Frankenstein's monster is reluctant to aid Dracula and wanders into the forest where he encounters Phoebe. I mean, before this, though, Frankenstein's monster in the crate or coffin or whatever drops. Yeah. Conveniently lands in the swamp where Gillman is. He picks up the coffin and throws it onto land.
Don't try to analyze.
The mummy shows up. Wolfman shows up. They got the gathering of monsters. And Dracula brings Frank... I guess you could call him Dracula's monster here, because he brings him back to life. But it's a very cool scene.
Yeah, I thought for the longest time, when the coffin was coming up, I thought it was Dracula using his like Dracula powers to raise it up.
Well, he started to. Remember, he points his cane or whatever at the water and it starts bubbling. But then Gillman comes up.
Yeah,
so I guess it was his...
But I always thought it was like Dracula and by... Because again, it had been since 2005 since I'd seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, I don't remember this scene. That's kind of cool. I wonder how they do that. And I see Gillman. It's like, oh.
So that kind of snuck up on... Wait, you were upset when you saw Gillman?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I thought it was Dracula being all Dracula and badass.
Dude, I loved Gillman in this, though.
I did. He looked really, really, really good. He kind of looked like a mix between the original Gillman and a piranha.
Yeah, a little bit. He had very, like, this spiky, like, really spiky fins down mm-hmm. his back, his head, and then he had those teeth.
Yeah.
That the original Gillman did not have. They did tweak him a bit, but... Oh, man, he looked just fantastic.
I'm just going to go out there and say it right now. This Gillman could kick the other Gillman's butt.
And the guy who played Gillman in this, he had a hell of a time, you know, wearing the suit and everything as well. And
I'm sure.
He had very limited sight. you could see out of like the tear ducts that right. were like closer to the middle of Gilman's eyes and nose, like right in there. And they were a couple inches from his face. So when he had to look out, he had to really look out. His vision was very limited. He had trouble acting in this suit.
I actually was on the documentary last night. There was this thing he was talking about where he was saying that he used to fall asleep in the suit because it was just so hard to take it on and off. So he fell asleep in the suit.
Mm-hmm.
And when he woke up, nobody was around because he just fell asleep right on set.
Oh, wow.
But nobody was around and whatever. He didn't know where he was. He was freaking out. He started getting really claustrophobic and he had to start telling himself, you know, I'm just in the suit. Everything's okay.
Wow.
Whatever. But
and back then you didn't have like Jim Carrey had in The Grinch. You didn't have people to calm you down
right.
in 1987. So, I mean, I got a lot of respect for actors and actresses who do this sort of thing and stuntmen and everything because, I mean, they really go above and beyond. And especially with like the guys who played, I mean, even in the original, I mean, you can hear us go on and on about Creature from the Black Lagoon on our previous episode, but
right.
I can talk about it all day about how much I respect these guys who do this stuff because it's really difficult.
And even today, with you know, a lot of these movies where they use practical effects opposed to, you know, CGI, you know, these, you know, actors and actresses, they're still spending hours upon hours in the chair getting this makeup put on and this prosthetics put on and all this other shit.
Yeah.
And it's not just for horror movies, you know, TV shows, everything else, you know, you can think of anywhere they're using practical effects. And it still takes hours upon hours to have this stuff done.
Yeah, you got to give them credit, man.
I couldn't do it.
I'm claustrophobic. You're claustrophobic too, I believe.
I'm not claustrophobic. I'm just too damn jittery. I can't sit still.
Oh, man.
So.
Okay, so rather than being afraid, Phoebe's playing near
Phoebe.
Phoebe's playing near water next to the treehouse, the Monster Club treehouse,
which
and
is
Frankenstein.
An homage to the first Frankenstein movie.
I was going
to
mention that. So Frankenstein, walks up, and all you see is his feet, and you hear this dramatic music. But rather than being afraid, Phoebe shows Frankenstein's monster kindness. He also saw it, and he gets acquainted with her. After Phoebe shows the Monster Squad that Frankenstein's monster is not evil, which is a fucking hilarious part because she's trying to get her brother's attention, and she bites him. Oh, you brat, you bit me. I'm telling mom on you. Which is what we all would have done back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
If we had a little sister or even a little brother or something like that. So finally she says, "Would you look?" And Frankenstein's monster is just kind of staring there. And the next scene, it shows all the kids running
and hiding. Your pants had a face.
Running and hiding in bushes.
Trash cans.
Fat kid hides in the trash can, like Oscar the Grouch. And Phoebe's just standing there, holds his hand and says, "Come on, don't be chicken shit." And I love the facial expression that the monster makes.
Are you dead?
Dead.
Hey guys, get over here, he's great!
Almost like he's going, "What the hell's going on?" It's great. Frankenstein's monster is so great to watch in this. But yeah, this brief scene where Frankenstein meets Phoebe by the water, it's a clear homage to the similar yet more tragic scene in the original Frankenstein film. The way in which the scene plays out in this film is, according to previous interviews, more in line with the way Boris Karloff wanted to do the scene in the 1931 Frankenstein.
Right.
I think we actually talked about that on the Frankenstein episode,
too. I believe we did.
Because Boris Karloff, he didn't want to throw her in the water. He thought that it was just too violent. And it was either the director or the writer or someone said, no, this scene has to happen because it shows people that the monster doesn't know any better. I mean, it's more confusing, you know? People think that he's a monster and he's out to kill people. When really, I mean, to the viewers and, you know, to the audience and us, we know that he doesn't know any better. He wanted to do that scene like this in this movie.
Right. And I can understand that.
It wouldn't have made sense, though.
No. And I think that the way that they ended up doing it, not going against what Boris said, because, you know, it's Boris freaking Karloff, but I do think that the way that the scene played out in the original was more to the point of what they wanted to portray in the movie.
Right. I'm glad they did it this way, though.
Yeah. No, this way it was really sweet, and it really fit well with this movie.
Yeah. So the amulet turns out to be buried in a stone room under the house that Dracula and the other monsters now occupy, where Van Helsing's diary was originally found. The secret room, though, is littered with all sorts of crosses and other things that prevent any of the monsters from simply taking it. Garlic and everything. Again, I'm going to nitpick a little bit. Wolfman, just run in there and grab the amulet for him.
But you know, Wolfman didn't want to do that.
No, but when he was the Wolfman, he listened to Dracula.
He was stupid.
I hate you. Again, I mean, you could nitpick at little scenes like this, but you just got to watch it for what it is. So the Monster Squad finds and removes the amulet at this part. They go into this house, and it's hilarious because Fat Kid is, like, not wanting to once he finds out that monsters are actually real. He wants to start a nature club or a math club, and once they're in the Shadowbrook Road house...
I just got to say, Horace was such a great character.
Again, he had the best lines. There's a montage scene in here, and it's fucking hilarious. The music that plays here was written for this movie. I don't remember the name of the group, but oh my fucking god, dude. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it was definitely a great montage.
During this montage, with the Monster Squad getting ready to stop Dracula, Sean points out where Shadowbrook Road is on that map, where the mansion Dracula is hiding out. Now, on the other side of the map, if you look closely, and you've got to be quick, because I didn't notice it until last night, it says Cheney College as a location, which of course is an homage to the actor Lon Chaney Jr., mm-hmm. who played Lawrence Talbot in Universal's The Wolfman from 1941. I thought that was awesome. Yep. I saw that. I had to rewind it, and I was like, that's so cool.
This is another one of those movies that has so many Easter eggs for so many different movies, and I just, again, I love it when movies do that, you know, because it's paying respects to the movies that came before.
Now, the Monster Squad finds and removes the amulet and escapes Dracula's grasp only with sheer luck and a talent for improvisation. So they're at the Shadowbrook Road house, and the roof collapses on Frankenstein. Dracula takes dynamite and tries to blow up the room or something.
Why? He's Dracula.
Exactly.
But
yeah. Whatever. I don't know. Don't ask questions, but... So Frankenstein supposedly is dead, and then out of nowhere, Wolfman jumps right the fuck out. This scene scared me as a kid. It kind of scared me a little bit last night. It's a little bit of a jumper.
Yeah.
And Sean is screaming, kick him in the nards! And Fat Kid's like, he doesn't have nards! And Sean's like, do it, do it! He goes and he kicks him straight in the balls.
And I mean,
he's... And he goes, Wolfman's got nards!
And he's going for the freaking uprights when he kicks him.
It's like he's kicking a fucking field goal. It looked painful. It made me hurt.
Kick him in the nards! Kick him in the nards! He doesn't have nards! Do it! Do it! Wolfman's got nards! Come on! Come on!
But
it was great.
This is one of the most famous lines from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
If you've ever heard Wolfman's got nards, that's what this is from. He delivered that line so well. It's always, no one's going to forget this line.
Well, if they would have not used this line, they would have had to call the documentary Don't Be a Chicken Shit, and I don't think that'd fly very well.
Probably not, no. But anyway, so they get the amulet, and I guess Sean uses a piece of garlic pizza that he had in his pocket, I guess, or no, Fat Kid was carrying it, gives it to him or something, unwraps it, it's got garlic on it, and he burns Dracula's face with it.
Hey!
Pretty interesting, but why the hell are you carrying pizza around with you?
He's a fat kid.
Right, but still.
I'm a fat kid.
Do you carry pizza around with you in your pocket?
Sometimes.
No, you don't.
Sometimes.
Okay, so the German man informs them that the incantation must be read by a female virgin in order for this to work. For some odd reason, virgins had to do everything back in the 80s. Have you noticed this? Everything had to do with a virgin.
There was actually virgins back in the 80s.
This is true, but that's a story for a whole other podcast. Okay, so midnight is approaching and the squad makes their way to this local cathedral to make their last stand, apparently. And this is the best part of the movie, in my opinion, this whole scene here. At the nick of time, as shortly after they leave, Dracula destroys their clubhouse, again, with a stick of dynamite. I don't know why.
The thing is he has a dynamite. He uses his vampire powers to light the dynamite.
Yeah.
But he's using dynamite.
It's very strange. I've never seen...
It makes me laugh.
I've never seen a movie where Dracula uses dynamite.
I've never seen a movie where Dracula punches somebody like Mike frickin' Tyson.
It was one hell of a punch. This also calls up another helper from the Monster Squad, Sean's father, after this whole dynamite thing has happened. He He shows up after the dynamite's been thrown and blown up the treehouse. And then he takes a stick of dynamite and throws it under the cop car when he pulls up. And his, well, Sean's father's partner, what's his name, Dell?
Mm-hmm.
He's still in the car. He can't get out. He gets blown up. It was a little bit sad. And then Sean's dad is still standing there, tells Dracula to freeze. Dracula's not moving. He's just kind of staring and smirking at him. He shoots Dracula like 3-4 times. Nothing happens. And Dracula looks at him and says, I will have your son. And he lets him walk away. He gets in his hearse and he goes. I don't know about you, but if I was like, if that was my son, I don't care if it's King Kong. I'm going to run after your ass right now after you say you're going to come after my kid.
Well, here's the thing. He shot him 3 or 4 times.
And nothing happened.
Nothing happened. He says that. That would give me a moment of pause no matter what the situation was.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those moments where you don't really know what you would do until you're in the moment.
Yeah.
You got a point there. Thanks, Dick.
You know who else has a point? Dracula. He's got two of them.
God damn it. Why do people listen to us? So anyway, yeah, police detective Dell, who's been charged to investigate the strange happenings in town of late, but he's quite skeptical about their supernatural causes, not to mention Sean's hobby in the first place. So, yeah, his dad's further puzzled when he gets warnings from the werewolf, because he gets a call when he's at the police station when he's changing, and as the werewolf is actually also a reluctant pawn of Dracula in his human form, which we talked about. The
transformation part was crazy, dude.
I liked it. It was a little brief, but, I mean, for the time and for what they had to work with,
it was really
and this
good.
Type of werewolf, yeah, I liked it. I loved how he was, like, drooling from the mouth when he was on the phone.
Mm.
And then when he goes to leave the phone booth that he calls from, kids, if you're listening, a phone booth was actually, it was this little contraption. Watch Bill and Ted, you'll understand. Unfortunately, the doors to the cathedral are locked. The incantation is going to have to be read out there on the steps or out there in the street. And I love where they do this because it's almost like a, it's like this whole, like you got the cathedral and then you've got all these like different shops. You've got a Burger King and I think there's like a little gazebo out there. It's like a park. It's this big open area and it leaves the Monster Squad vulnerable because they're right there in the open. I find it kind of strange that it's midnight and everything's closed and nobody's out either.
Have
Nobody.
You never been to Candor, New York?
I have, but this is not Candor. This is an actual city that they're in, or at least suburb. So the Monster Squad has the assistance of Sean's father and Patrick's older sister, as she is apparently the only virgin that they know who can speak a little German. Unfortunately, with time winding down, the incantation fails since Lisa, the sister, is actually not a virgin anymore. She actually says that so-and-so, Steve or whatever,
she's
been with, but doesn't count. And her brother's like, doesn't count! So, yeah, she wasn't a virgin. So as Dracula's brides and these other monsters close in, it's realized that Phoebe, being 5 years old, obviously has to be a virgin, I hope. So the German guy attempts to help her read the incantation as the rest of the squad fends off the monsters. And it's great. You have this battle with these girl vampires where Rudy's taking, he's got like a crossbow.
He's got a bow and arrow.
And he's just shooting them with stakes that he made in school.
Dude! Like, turn into freaking Rambo.
Very quickly. And the mummy, I forgot to mention this. The mummy gets killed on the way. He jumps on the car. They're driving in this car or Jeep with the it's open top. And they're all in this Jeep, and the mummy just grabs on.
Like, and gets unraveled.
Yes, very quickly. Rudy takes a bow and arrow. And he ties one of the
wraps.
Yep. He ties one of the mummy's wraps onto the arrow and he shoots it and it hits a tree and it starts unraveling the mummy. And it was really cool how they said they did this scene. There, it obviously wasn't a guy in the mummy suit. It was it was just a whole prosthetic that they used. There's also another scene where the mummy's in the closet. Because Eugene, one of the kids, is in his bedroom.
Yeah.
And he calls his dad because they said that there's a mummy in his closet, or mummy in his room, or monster.
He said there's a monster in his closet.
And the dad opens it up, but he doesn't look in the closet. He's just looking at his son going, oh, look at the big, scary monster. Oh, meanwhile, there actually is a mummy back there. And that is an animatronic mummy that they used. Yeah. And I thought that was very cool because they didn't have to, but it did look a little bit more decrepit and crumbly. And I think that that's why they said that they used the animatronic version.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. That dad was funny, though.
Yeah.
Because that's what dads would have been like back then, you know?
Oh, when he first walks into the room, he's like, look at all these monsters!
Out, out, get out of here, all you monsters, you, on the bed, get out!
It would be something that my mom would have done when I was a kid.
I think my dad actually did do something like that when I was a kid, yeah. Only it was Jaws with alligator legs.
Here we go again.
Yep, here we go. So anyway, so that's how the mummy gets, he gets killed pretty quickly. The vampires get killed. And then you have Gilman and the werewolf left, and they're killed too. What's really cool, the werewolf, well, when the dad shows up, Dracula turns into a bat, and he flies to where the monster squad is. And when Sean's dad's pulling up, he starts shooting at the bat because he knows that that's Dracula. And the bat flies through the, this 2-3-story window of this. Apparently, it's some sort of Foot Locker or sports clothing store because you see all this Adidas wear around it and everything. So he goes up there and somehow he has a stick of dynamite. I guess Dracula dropped it when he was a bat carrying it. I don't know. But the way that they make Dracula look in the scene is fucking weird because like, he's like a...
half like, bat, half human type thing.
Yeah, but full size human.
Yeah.
And half bat sort of thing.
I thought the practical effects on that were really good.
It was awesome. His foot, though, looked a little bit like a dog's foot. Did you notice that? So Del takes a stick of dynamite and he says, what does he say? He's like, suck on this or something like that. And he lights the stick of dynamite and the werewolf is behind him, turns him around and starts beating the shit out of him, throws him across the room. And Sean shows up and says, hey to the werewolf really loudly, and then he says, you looked, and then he just bats him right in the face with a baseball bat. And very quickly, Del, Sean's dad, grabs that stick of dynamite that's almost about to explode and puts it down or in the belt loop of the werewolf's pants and just shoves him out the window, and he explodes right when he goes out the window.
Awesome.
It looked amazing. This was probably one of the best practical effects in the whole movie, I thought, especially for 1987.
Especially after he starts putting himself back together.
That part was awesome because you know there's only one way to kill a werewolf.
Silver bullet.
That's right. So Dracula arrives and he's about to kill Phoebe next. But before that, you see Fat Kid out in the open and you see all these police trying to like beat up Gilman because Gilman comes out of the sewer for some odd reason. I don't know.
That's where he swam to.
That's where he swam to, I guess. Pretty gross. You know, these guys that are using their batons or whatever, or batons, wow.
Nightsticks.
Those nightsticks were like foam or something, but I guess like they were still, there was still some metal in them to make them heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And from the special features on this Blu-ray that I have, the guy who played in the Gilman suit said that they were really wailing on him.
Ow.
So like when it shows them like hitting him, he was actually really getting bruised and hurt while they were wailing on him in this part. So this is all like they're acting, but they're really hitting him.
Awesome.
Yeah. Needless to say, Gilman kicks the shit out of him.
Kind
of
like poor Kane Hodder in House when he's getting the crap beat out of him with a shovel.
Well, that was just his hand at least. Gilman's getting his whole body like hit. He's getting the back of his head hit, his body, his arms, his legs. And Fat Kid, Horace, he's there. He picks up a gun. He's got like a shotgun or something like that.
Yeah, he's got like freaking 12 gauge.
A big fucking 12 gauge and he's backing up. He tries to get into the shop behind him. One of the bullies that bullied him in school is in there, won't let him in, of course. And that's the kid from the Wonder Years, by the
Thank you. I was just about to say that.
Yeah, I didn't mention this earlier.
He also played in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
The useless knowledge in my brain.
Yeah, you know what? This is why we're professionals.
We're professionals?
Okay, moving on. So he's got a 12-gauge. Gilman's moving towards him slowly and kind of like hissing at him or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Horace just shoots him, just blasts him right in the heart area or the right hand side or something.
He leaves a big shit out of
big
him.
Fucking like hole in him. The prosthetics they used on this looked really good, and there was a little blood. And it's cool. They the bullies come out of the store and they go, "Hey, Fat Kid, good job." And Fat Kid turns around and goes, "My name is Horace," and then he cocks the shotgun and you hear like hero music. It's so great. It's such a great scene. Another memorable line from
looks
this
like
movie.
A young Bruce Campbell.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was just so great. Okay, so now at this point, Dracula, he's all that's left, him and Frankenstein's monster. It's a very cool scene because you see Dracula show up while Phoebe's reading the German diary and the scary German guy's helping her. Dracula shows up and he's like electric. Yeah. He shows up in front of the car and you see like all this electricity going through him, and it's a really creepy scene and it's great. He starts walking toward Phoebe, and all these police are trying to stop him. What I love about this, because it shows Dracula's like strength, he keeps walking. Nothing is stopping him. And right. He's just like fighting these guys off like it's nothing. And he's just walking normal, pushing them aside or choking them out or punching them in the face. And when he gets up to Phoebe, he grabs her by the chin underneath and picks her up, looks at her. Poor Phoebe's got this, you know, cute little face, really surprised look on her face. And he goes,
"Give me the amulet, you bitch."
And she starts screaming. Now, Mike, you said you saw the Wolfman Scott Nard's documentary. Yeah. Explain what they went through during this scene.
So apparently they had to do this in two takes because the first take, they didn't tell Phoebe about any of this. They just...
They said the scream.
Yeah.
And they asked, when do I scream? And they said,
so you'll know.
You'll know.
And the first time they did it, she was so scared that she couldn't scream. She just let out this real weak yelp.
Yeah.
So they ended up having to do a second take. But it also says, I guess from what you said on the special features, mm-hmm. that they were able to do it in one take. So there's kind of some mixed messages going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, that scene is...
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the more iconic scenes from the movie.
Yeah, it was a very good scene. It was all real. Her reaction was very real
mm-hmm.
because she didn't know what he was. She didn't know the dialogue. She didn't know what was going to happen. As soon as he hissed at her, because, Dracula hisses, you see his fangs, and then he's got the bright red eyes.
Yeah, because she, I guess that when he, no, they were red.
Were they red?
He walked up to her, he had his eyes and his mouth closed, and then when he picks her up, he opens his eyes and hisses at her.
Right.
And it scared the shit out of her, which...
Of course, yeah. When he's doing this, Frankenstein's monster turns against Dracula. He ends up pushing him or hitting him from behind. Dracula slowly puts Phoebe down. And when he turns around, there's Frankenstein's monster with a big smile on it. And he says, "Bogus." He ends up throwing him through the air. Dracula gets impaled on this iron fence. It's like this big pointy stake that goes right through the center of his chest.
Mm.
But he's not dead because it's not a wooden stake. It would kill anybody else, though. So... Phoebe then finishes the incantation, and this opens up the portal, which begins to consume the bodies of all the evil and the monsters and blah, blah, blah. Dracula, though still alive, somehow he lifts himself up off of this stake, this iron stake fence.
As one tends to do.
Mm-hmm. You see the blood there, but he's gone. And he attempts to drag Sean with him. And Sean's on top of Dracula, and they're sliding, you know, back, gonna get sucked in through this portal. But Sean is saved at the last minute. He gets a stake that he finds like on the ground next to him, and he just stabs Dracula. And I love the way he does it because he like kind of winds up and it looks like he says something or he does something with his mouth. Like he's really like winding up, and he just punctures right through Dracula with this wooden stake. And then Van Helsing comes out of nowhere, who briefly escaped the limbo to take Dracula to his doom. It was like, you know, and they give each other a thumbs up and everything as Van Helsing is choking Dracula with a big smile on his face. This part was very heartwarming. It was sad.
It sucked.
Phoebe tries to tearfully hold onto Frankenstein's monster. But, you know, he clearly has to go through this portal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're yelling for you. She's like, "Frankenstein's, please don't go. Don't go away." And he's yelling, "Phoebe." And she throws her little stuffed
scraps.
Animal. Yeah, scraps. He catches it and he waves and he says bye and the portal closes and she's, you know, in tears and, you know, but the world's saved by the Monster Squad and that's really it. The army shows up because apparently
was really freaking random.
It came out of nowhere. Eugene, this little kid, like during the montage, he writes in crayon, "Army guys, come quick, there are monsters," signed Eugene. And that was it.
Yeah.
They show up at the end and they ask, "All right, where are the monsters?" And Sean gives him this card and he's like, "We're the Monster Squad."
Yeah.
And then it plays this terrible, terrible 80s rap song by the same band that did the montage. It was done by the same artist who did this. But it's so... Oh, dude, it's so 80s. It screams 80s.
Yeah, 80s and early 90s. Because if you remember, there was a lot of different movies around that time that used the hip-hop... rap for, like, the Addams Family movie with Raul Julia.
Addams Family, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had, I mean, come on, you had Vanilla Ice and the Secret of the Ooze.
Don't remind me.
Oh, dude, I love it. I love 80s cheese like this. It's so hilarious. Dude, the song that they played in the montage is just too, too funny.
That
it's
was fantastic, and most of the hip-hoppy stuff I can deal with, but I don't like Vanilla Ice. I really don't.
Dude, word to your mother.
Damn it, Johnny.
All right. So anyway, that's the end of the movie, and I'm telling you, I mean, we missed a lot. We missed a lot of parts in this plot, but we only have about an hour, and there's just not enough time to talk about all these amazing moments in this movie. So with that being said, we're going to get into our final ratings. Mike?
I will straight out say that, again, I cannot rate this movie on nostalgia. There were a couple of things about this movie that could have been done better. But all in all, I will say that this movie gets a solid 8 from me.
Solid 8.
Solid 8. It's been a part of my life since I was a kid. And it's a fun movie. It ranks up there for me in the same vein as The Goonies. Are, you know, even the Ghostbuster movies. I think 8 is a really good and fair score.
I think so,
for
yeah.
It.
No, that's good. And well, with this movie, it's monsters.
Yes. We need a ghost squad.
So I guess that brings us to my rating. So after watching this on Blu-ray, it was like watching it for the first time all over again, to be honest. They did an outstanding job with it. The audio and the video presentations are amazing. This is by far the best this film has ever looked, hands down. The special effects were top-notch for the time, and they still look great today. The scene where the Wolfman explodes and his body parts begin to creep back together to reform his werewolf self, how that was shot was done perfect, as we recently said. It was outstanding for this time. They didn't rely on heavy special effects for the sequence, but rather props and shadows and things like that. And it's truly amazing. This film, it's got it all. Corny yet hilarious dialogue, quotable lines, memorable characters, pretty solid pacing, an engaging story and action, intimidating universal monsters portrayed by admirable practical effects, and off the charts levels of 80s camp. I honestly don't know how anyone could not love this movie. And I mean, I understand not everyone will appreciate this film to the degree that I do or Misfit Mike would, but seriously, this movie is pure gold. Sure, there are plenty of detriments strewn about, you know, things like that, but they're minor, and the bonus points more than cancel them out. So if you don't hold the decade in reference, I still think any horror fan will enjoy this movie. The entertainment factor is exceptionally high. From me, the Monster Squad gets an 8.5, just a little bit above you, Mike, but we're pretty much on the same page.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, if I was to, you know, rate this based on nostalgia factor, it would be off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
So 8.5 for me. So we can't recommend this movie enough, I don't think. With that being said, believe it or not, this has a gore-o-meter.
A very small one, but yes, it does have a gore-o-meter.
There's a tiny bit of gore, and I'll just go. I gave this a 1. Just because I don't think you can go any lower than that. There's really not much. There's just very little. Some of the practical effects were great. There was a little bit of blood when Gilman got shot by Horace. A little bit of blood with Dracula when he got staked there. And then you had that werewolf scene where he exploded. You know, there's a few scenes in here, but yeah. I don't really think it's anything that you wouldn't want to show your kids to.
Right.
I mean, your little kids, you know, like if they're 5 and 6 and they want to watch this, you might want to have a... You know, parents might want to be present.
Right.
You know, just in case some people are still a little bit iffy about showing their kids, you know, monsters and stuff like that. Because some kids do get a little bit more afraid than others and don't like this stuff. So what would you rate the gore-o-meter?
I think I'd give it a one as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some a couple of little gruesome parts. Again, like when, you know, Wolfman gets blown to bits. That's kind of gnarly. But other than that, I mean, like you said, a little bit of blood with the Gill Man, a little bit with Dracula. But it's definitely on the lighter side of the gore spectrum. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more about the story and the monsters than anything else. It's really not a gory movie. You got any final thoughts for this movie? We've talked this movie up.
just as usual, if you haven't seen it, by all means, give it a shot. I mean, I love it. Johnny loves it.
Love it.
I know a lot of people who...
Love it.
...have... Love the, you know, have seen this movie just recently. They just thought it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anybody that I know who doesn't like this movie. So, I mean, by all means, give it. If you're looking for a gore fest, you're not going to be, you know, satisfied with this. But if you're just looking for a good time.
A good family suspenseful movie. There's definitely a lot of suspense in this movie. There's some great acting. It's a little hokey. Some of the dialogue is hokey.
And again, if you're easily offended by stuff that happened in 87,
then you don't want to watch it.
Right.
You
know,
if you're offended by the word fag and faggot, I believe, is used a couple times, but really, these are just kids goofing around. And I think it's one of them is a bully scene.
Yeah.
And believe me, he gets what's coming to him. So you might actually enjoy it.
And again, this is a good place to start if your kids are wanting to get into. Horror type movies. You could do a lot worse.
If you grew up in the 80s and you missed out on this gem, seriously, seek it out now. I mean, this is what family horror should be all about, in my opinion.
Exactly.
So with that being said, I think that we have said all that we can about the Monster Squad.
Yes, sir.
I think we kicked this one right in the nards.
And we weren't chicken shits about it.
I'm thrilled that we got to do this movie, though. That's great, Mike.
Yeah, again, thank you for bringing it up, because it's been so long since I've seen it. So.
Thank you for wanting to do this.
Oh, always.
And thank you all for listening to our 31st episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show.
Yeah.
You can listen to all of our previous episodes wherever you could find podcasts. And if you got any movie requests, send them to our Facebook messages or email MisfitMike@MisfitMike1986@gmail.com. And also, please rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this at. Don't forget to lock your doors and windows. Check the closet and look under the bed, because there might be a mummy in there. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
And remember,
keep the horror alive!